Welcome to Wham Bam Tram. I'm James Ockenden, editor of Transit Jam. I'm here with co-host Martin Turner, chairman of the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance. And today we're going to take a walk around one of the most iconic districts in the world, Pudong in Shanghai, and see just how walkable this new metropolis really is. Well, we're not actually going over there, of course, but we have expert Katerina Villani, co-author of the award-winning Walkable Cities in High Density China, talking about walkability and lessons for Hong Kong. But first, let's go meet our youth team, who've been out to Telford Plaza to meet the founder of the fabulous YouTube channel Hidden Hong Kong. Amelia Vogelzang and Jessica Wong will chat with Viom Aria in the very latest Youth Talk.
I'm Jessica. We're the Transport Twins, and we're presenting to you Youth Talk.
Hello, this is Amelia and Jessica, and we're with Viom, the creator of Hidden Hong Kong.
How long have you been doing it for again?
I started during the pandemic as a side hobby sort of thing, and it started around March 2020. Hidden Hong Kong is basically a YouTube channel where I talk about mostly transport infrastructure, but also like abandoned things in Hong Kong, the things that most people don't know about.
Awesome, sounds great. So I just firstly want to ask, how did you first get into transport?
I think mostly because my parents used to get me toy trains as kids, to be honest. I used to love playing with toy tracks. And I think when I grew up, I started relating those things to real life trains, and I always enjoyed how mass transit works and operates. So I think that's how I got into rail infrastructure.
So how do you normally go about finding the topics for your YouTube videos?
I go hiking and like biking a lot around Hong Kong and the countryside. And usually I find something interesting that I'm like, oh, that's cool. I want to research that further. And if it's a good story, I just make a video on it. It's nothing too planned. It's just impulsive, I guess.
So just getting out there and exploring things.
I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, I'm always curious about like, why is this the way it is or something like that, yeah.
Can you give us an example?
So when I was reading up on the Kowloon Canton Railway, it said that it originally was a single track line and that they duplicated it onto a double track line in like the 1970s when they were developing Sha Tin and the likes. And so there was a single line about how they replaced the tunnel because it wasn't wide enough for the new line. And so I was like, where did the old tunnel go? And so I went onto all sorts of mapping websites, and in some like government archaeological mapping survey, there was a tunnel outline next to the new one. And so I was like, oh, that's really cool. I want to see that. And so I went out one day. It's really close to my home. I just walked out and I saw the old tunnel. And it was really cool. It said Beacon Hill Tunnel 1910, a very old piece of ancient history that literally no one knows about. It's just sitting there. And it doesn't even have declared monument status or anything. So I just made a video on it, because I thought it'd be cool to maybe raise some awareness, hopefully get it some sort of protection as well. Right now, it's just being used as a gas pipeline.
But so it was a former tunnel for trains or roads, trains, right?
It was a train tunnel. It was the first tunnel in Hong Kong, and it was for the Kowloon Canton Railway that ran from previously from the Tsim Sha Tsui Clock Tower all the way up to the border and Lowu and through to Guangzhou.
Do you have your favorite MTR line?
My favorite MTR line is actually probably the East Rail line, which is the successor of the Kowloon Canton Railway. Most other lines are relatively new, around 1980s onwards. So the East Rail line is the only real line that I feel has like actual history behind it. It used to carry freight. It used to be an actual like national railway through connecting Hong Kong to Guangzhou. And it was like the main center point for trading and commercial activities in Hong Kong. And the East Rail Line has a lot of relics from that, which I find interesting. It's also Hong Kong's most unique rail line because it has things like first-class carriages, which are like a relic of the old railways.
So you're self-taught in video editing, and what kind of equipment do you use?
I really only use my smartphone, and I do have a drone at home, which I use for some shots, but honestly, anyone can just pick up a phone and start creating YouTube videos on any topic that they like. And I think that's really empowering, actually.
Thanks for talking with us, Viom. A very interesting look into transport in Hong Kong and how anybody really can just get stuck into it and learn cool things.
Thank you for your time, Amelia and Jessica. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Amelia and Jessica. And yes, that Beacon Hill Tunnel is really a hidden gem. But now, let's welcome Katerina, or Kate, Villani, a fellow at PolyU School of Design, to Wham Bam Tram. Okay, so Kate, congratulations on the prize for your book. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book?
Sure. I'm super thrilled that Walkable Cities in High Density China received this award merit from the HKUID, Hong Kong Institute of Urban Design. We tried to propose strategies to make cities more livable, more healthier and friendlier by making them more walkable.
Okay. And so there's some great chapters in there. And one chapter that stood out for me was that you wrote about this district, Lujiazui, in Shanghai, which I think is part of what people know as Pudong, the sort of the financial district of Shanghai. And it's really iconic and it seems like a great case study. And, you know, so what extent does the rest of China follow that model of just sort of crazy fast development like that?
The main idea is that there isn't one size fits all project. So we looked at four different urban patterns, of which one was the financial district, the CBD, in high density China. The other ones were the urban village, the workers' village, or Danwei. And it is a paradigmatic case of a Chinese CBD with iconic skyscrapers, not very interactive facades at the ground floor, at least, very large road, elevated walkways, which is great to see from the Bund, but may not be really walkable when you are at the ground level.
Yeah.
Walking.
It's like a different city. The Bund is extremely walkable and you can stroll along, but over there, I mean, Martin, have you been over there to the Pudong side?
Well, I saw Pudong when it was sprouting one time, and it was quite clear then that it was going to be, you know, all new and shiny and very very different from the Bund. I noticed in the book you made a direct comparison between this main bold street through the new area and Champs-Élysées.
Yes.
And you know, you contrasted them, and yet they both have this sense of being a grand statement thoroughfare. So what do you see as the differences between an old European main street like that and this particular main street that you say causes such problems for walkability?
The main idea of this Century Avenue was to create a magnificent, spectacular avenue or large street to represent a new idea of China, a modern, open, competitive China. And so the whole Pudong New Area plan was related to these ideas or these main aims. But the result compared to a European city is very much vehicle oriented. And we're speaking about 100 meter wide, six lanes plus two service lanes infrastructure, which overlaps with a grid of blocks in a very angular way. So the pedestrian crossings are extremely large and the facades of the building are not uniform as in Champs-Élysées. So, and the blocks are massive. So I would say these are just two of the main differences.
And sorry, the pedestrian crossings, I mean, 100 metres sounds a long way to walk for anybody, but pedestrian crossings, are these at grade or subways or overhead? How do they work?
They are at the ground level, but as the Century Avenue basically overlaps to a grid, which is quite orthogonal grid of blocks.
Mm-hmm. So it runs diagonally through a normal grid
correct,
of streets.
Correct. It creates some eight lanes, eight roads crossings, which are quite dangerous for pedestrians and quite unwalkable because you need to cross first 100 meters and then you need to reach maybe a building which is either 20 or 30 meters from the border of the blocks.
What's the idea there? I mean, Champs-Élysées wasn't designed for cars. It was primarily horse and cart when that was built, I guess. You know, so why did Shanghai go for this car-first model?
Again, the idea was to create a new, modern, competitive China. And unfortunately, what was then implemented was a more vehicle-first planning with wide roads, many car lanes. And although the sidewalks are quite large, then the facades are really detached from the from where you need to go from, coming from the center of the street. Mm. So unfortunately, the idea or the coordination between the planning for the cars and then the pedestrian planning was not really too much integrated. Mm. So there are some elevated walkways, but then that is, again, another problem, and that is also what was tackled, or we tried to tackle in the book.
Yeah, because it does look more like sort of downtown Houston in Texas rather than Champs-Élysées in Paris. So correct. Was that their idea of modern, was, you know, cars and highways? It's quite amusing.
Correct. Right. So, yeah. Okay. It is, well, that is also another big topic, that modernity means having more cars or using cars. Maybe 30 years ago, that was the direction. But of course, today we know that it is not the way to go.
Yeah.
In most cities, we know that that is not the way to go.
That's right. I'm just wondering, you know, how reversible is that? We've seen that kind of reversed in Paris. But, you know, how reversible is it in this district in Pudong?
Well, it would take some courage to close maybe the service lanes, or make at least there are different strategies that I propose in this chapter that mainly comes from my master thesis, so that was linked to a bigger project. One point is to create more crossings at the street level. Another is to create more interconnection between the walkways and then the street level. And another one is, for example, to make full use of the green spaces. They're really just ornamental green spaces at the moment, which may be fenced, then which maybe look like flower beds, but that may be used in another way. So, for example, making full use and making them fully accessible by pedestrians or shaded. So, we see sometimes the same also in Hong Kong, where green spaces are maybe not really accessible, or they're like flower beds at the...
with little fences around them.
Yes. With little fences around them, and sometimes really there's already... like the space is already so shrink that it's...
and a
like
sign which says,
another...
rat poison, do not touch, and this
exactly.
sort of thing.
Well, be fair, sometimes they have nice areas of grass with fences around them that you can't go on.
Exactly, and then there are all the... even in Lujiazui, like, as we see in Hong Kong, there are all those traffic paraphernalia where there are the three street signs, one next to the other, which really reduce the space for pedestrians on the sidewalk. But in that case, the sidewalk space is really huge, so that is not too much of a problem. Maybe in Hong Kong, it is more of a problem.
Okay. Let's talk about this multi-level accessibility, because part of that district is the sort of walkways. And I think we have the same problem in Hong Kong, is that commercial space is really taking over public space. And we have this commercial building model that have podiums and then walkways. And so, for example, Exchange Square, where the ground floor was essentially taken away from the people. And now you have to go up on these bridges and around. And that's very obvious in Pudong. I mean, is this a model that we're just going to have to live with going forward? It seems to be the prevailing way.
The let's say the creation of these elevated walkways in that area in Lujiazui was more related to have a broader view of these towers. So by raising 5 meters from the ground, your field of vision enhances, so you can actually see, for example, the top of these towers, while when you're at the ground level you really cannot see that. So the creation of that was a bit different from the evolution in Hong Kong of the
interesting yeah so
walkways.
Was that actually a stated goal, was it to raise the pedestrians so they could
because actually there is quite enough space on the sidewalk, but this creates let's say a more direct connection between buildings, which are again not at the border of the streets, but they're like maybe after 50 meters from in the center of
setback the setback from the from
setback
the carriageway.
Exactly. The setbacks are different, completely different between Hong Kong and Shanghai. And then to have a more let's say spectacular, iconic view of this new financial district. So coming back to your question, the strategies that I proposed in this chapter were more related to interconnecting the ground level with the elevated level, and also creating actually more activities on the elevated level. So I personally do not agree too much when architects, planners, urban designers say that there is no life on skywalks, because we see that in research in urban studies, in geography, they suggest quite the opposite. But of course, the topic of the environmental social control on commercial spaces is still there. And so what I personally believe is that commercial spaces pervading our cities, so that could be a bit stopped, or there might be some kind of guidelines in order to create accessible space, although maybe privately owned. But that is another maybe. Maybe I'm
but you've done so. I did read some research you'd done on that another topic. Don't want to get too far off this, but when you were looking at the foreign domestic helpers and their Sunday gatherings on the footbridges around Central, I thought that was very interesting. And it's interesting that it's commercial because it's public space essentially, but it is controlled and there is that enforcement element.
So the point was in fact that it is not totally true that there is no life at the elevated on the elevated walkways or on the skywalks. People who don't have space in other parts of the cities, or who don't have access to stay every Sunday in a Starbucks for 8 hours. So that is a space that, because of the density and high density in Hong Kong, can be used and maybe can be redesigned in order to make it more accessible or make it more friendly to everyone who can use it. Mm. Let's remember that during Sunday, the financial districts are usually...
We actually met the first time, Kate, I think at the Transport Department event, which was a workshop to discuss walkability in Sham Shui Po. And they'd brought a few residents and people together to discuss this. And we sat at a table and looked at maps and talked about all these things. That was years ago, right? And still, yeah. Has anything happened as a result of that? I'm not aware of anything, but...
The last update that I have about that project was that it is still ongoing. And of course, during COVID, everything was stopped because, if I remember correctly, that project arrived until phase two. So the final phase, which also required some workshops and some forums, was basically stopped and shut down during COVID.
Why have we stopped doing this because of COVID? When we look at the rest of the world, pretty much everywhere else in the world has accelerated this work specifically because of COVID. It's not COVID has stopped things. So why are we using it as an excuse?
Correct. In my understanding, just some participatory workshop discussion were stopped. But let's say in some other cities, residents association or like community centers association kind of backed up the closure of the street, and it was maybe to some extent in some city it was something even more informal, like informally closing one street. In Hong Kong, actually, activities didn't shut down completely, so that might be even connected to this.
There was a government statement that they were absolutely not going to respond to COVID with any kind of facilitation of cycling or walking. It was their policy to not do what everybody else was doing.
That is a bit sad.
But let's be optimistic, because we want to leave on a high note. So where are we with walking and cycling? Is there something that we can look forward to in the coming year?
Well, we might be looking forward to the actual implementation of those projects we were participating in.
So that was Soho area and Shamshui-po.
Shamshui-po and yeah. Soho area.
And they were traffic calming, weren't they?
Partially traffic calming, partially pedestrianization, full-time pedestrianization. And a part, if I'm not wrong, part-time pedestrianization.
In the next year, you think so?
My last communication was just that it was still ongoing. It was not totally stopped, but COVID, let's say, put pause to that. I'm not fully aware if, I'm not fully aware when it will start again, when it will resume, but I know that it is not totally shut down.
Okay, Kate, we unfortunately have run out of time. It's a pleasure talking to you, so thank you very much. And we hope to talk to you again soon about some of these pedestrianisation zones opening up. Thanks, Kate. Some really great insights there from Shanghai and locally too. So next week, we've got a real environmental legend coming to the studio. Dr. Merin Pierce, sustainability consultant and ecopreneur, a very familiar face to anyone working in environment or sustainability in Hong Kong. He's relocating to New Zealand after, I think, decades here, so it's the last chance to catch him in person for a while. We'll be talking about the development of Muwo, recollections of his work, and the future of Hong Kong's environmental movement. That's next week on Wham Bam Tram. See you then.